This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As high school seniors weigh their college choices this spring, their parents look at the bottom line and discover scholastic sticker shock. As the price of higher education continues to climb, middle-class families can find themselves in a bind. There doesn't seem to be any way to afford tuition, but they make too much money to qualify for financial aid. To help address that problem, more and more state and private colleges award scholarship money based on merit, which rewards students with good grades and test scores, though that usually reduces the amount of money available for students from poor families. In theory, switching the focus from need to merit shouldn't make all that much difference. Merit scholarships allow schools to attract high-performing students and make tuition more manageable for everybody. In practice, though, this system leads to whiter and wealthier college classes. So the debate continues. Should the goal of scholarship money be to reward academic achievement or to open higher education to qualified students who couldn't otherwise afford it? Later on, we'll remember the life of Kenneth Clark, the education researcher who helped win the Brown versus Board of Education case 50 years ago, and we'll have more on the UN Nuclear Proliferation Conference in New York. But first, financial aid, merit versus need. With a limited pool of funds, where do you put the emphasis? We especially want to hear from students and parents making decisions about college. How much does financial aid of either kind affect your plans? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Kenneth Redd, Director of Research and Policy Analysis at the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
How much have things changed? Is there really that much more merit money available now?
There actually is, and the one thing that I wanted to say as far as your introduction, it's not just private colleges that are giving out more merit funding. It's also public colleges.
We mentioned public colleges, but go ahead.
The fact of the matter is that merit aid funding has more than tripled. Back in 1990, it was a little bit less than $1 billion, around $600 million in merit funding. Today, for a lot of different reasons, the amount of merit funding has now exceeded $6 billion.
And is that how does that compare with financial needs money?
Well, to compare that to financial need money, the largest federal government program for needy students is the Pell Grant program, and in that same period, it went up from about $9 billion to now about $13 billion. So you can see the big contrast, the merit money more than tripling, and the need-based funding increasing but not increasing nearly as fast.
Is the motivation the same for state scholarship funds and private college scholarships of private schools as they hand out more money, merit money?
It pretty much is the same. Two reasons why the big increase in merit funding. One is the one that you mentioned. Colleges realize and states realize that as the price of college goes up, more and more middle-income families will be unable to afford the sticker price. So what they're doing is trying to lower that sticker price and continue to make college affordable for those middle-income families. The other reason is that many of these colleges and the states as well are in competition with each other for meritorious students. They all want to keep their ratings up, and one of the ways you keep your college ratings up is by attracting more students with high scholastic grades, SAT scores, and those characteristics.
When you talk about the ratings, are these the ratings they get in U.S. News and World Report, those kind of things?
Exactly. The ratings that they get from U.S. News and World Report is one. And also, a lot of colleges are also rated by their states. A lot of public colleges, for example, every year states have to be accountable to the legislature for the money they're spending. And one of the ways they're rated on is how many students are graduating, how many students have particular characteristics. And colleges react to those kinds of ratings by enrolling more students who would meet certain criteria, and those tend to be students who are meritorious, who have the high scores and the other things that you mentioned earlier.
And how much do diversity and economic diversity calculate into those formulas?
Well, that is the dilemma for many colleges. At the same time that they want to increase their ratings and increase their their numbers of students who have high SAT scores, they also are pressured by other people to increase their economic and racial diversity. Unfortunately, a lot of the students who get merit-type scholarships come from middle and higher-income families, and there's a feeling among a lot of people who study these issues that the lower-income students, the African-American and Latino students who tend not to qualify as at greater levels for these scholarships are being left behind.
Is this the same pot of money? Is this a zero-sum game? If somebody gets it, somebody loses it?
Well, that's where I kind of disagree a little bit with some of the other people who have studied these issues. In a lot of ways, it really isn't the same pot of money. If you take states, for example, most states, when they fund their merit scholarships, fund them out of state lotteries. That lottery money probably wouldn't go to need-based scholarships. It really is new money that's being set aside specifically for merit scholarships, whereas need-based grants are primarily funded by state appropriations. For the institutions, it's a little bit different in that a lot of the institutions, when they award these scholarships, they are awarding it from the same pot of money, so to speak. But again, as I said, their motivation for increasing their financial aid budgets is not the same as it would be for increasing the number of low-income students. It's not quite the same pot of money.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's begin with Ashley, and Ashley's calling us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. It just seems like the lower middle classes get totally frozen out of funding for private universities in terms of just the massive amount of cost of private universities. Just $40,000 a year is just, I got into several elite private universities, but I couldn't, even with the minimal amount of need-based financial aid, I couldn't afford even half the tuition. It would just have put me into an impenetrable amount of debt. And I did receive a merit-based scholarship from our local public university, Louisiana State University, and that did allow me to go to college. But if I had only to rely on the private universities, I would have never been able to afford it.
Or you might have emerged after 4 years of education with a huge loan payment due.
Yeah, and in my field, I'm in urban and regional planning, I never would have been able to pay it back for another, 40 years.
Ashley is hardly alone.
No, not at all. In fact, one of the things that we talked about before is this Ashley's comments is very relevant. She's probably from a family that makes a little bit too much money to qualify for a need-based Pell Grant or need-based scholarship. But at the same time, her family doesn't make quite enough to completely afford that $40,000 price tag. So a lot of colleges have reacted to those kinds of comments by raising their merit-based funding. But the other thing that she mentioned, too, is that even though she did get some scholarship money, she still has to face the idea of a $40,000 price tag to go to a private school. So while merit funding has increased pretty dramatically, the price of college has also gone up pretty rapidly as well. So it's a very difficult bind for students like her. So I feel a lot of sympathy for those kinds of comments because it's as much financial aid as you can provide, whether it's need-based or merit-based, for a lot of families, it's still not enough. They're still looking at borrowing or working part-time while they're in school.
And Ashley, how'd you do?
Oh, I mean, I did great. I did have to borrow some to get through undergrad and graduate school, and I do have about $25,000 in money to get through, and that's just from public universities. But, I mean, I'm doing great now. I have a job, and I'll pay it back. Someday, but I'm just glad there was the public university was a great opportunity. And I just wish that we held public universities in higher esteem because they are the only affordable option for many people. And I just hate the elitism with private universities because they're just so unaffordable for so many people.
Ashley, thanks very much for the call and continued good luck.
Oh, thank you too, Heather. Bye.
Some colleges are opting out of the bidding wars on merit-based scholarships, among them Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Robert Massa is the Vice President for Enrollment and College Relations, has become an outspoken critic of this trend, and he joins us now from the college's radio station. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
And were some of Ashley's remarks the reasons for your opposition to some of these scholarships?
Well, I think the first thing that's important to understand is that the private colleges are really, for the most part, committed to access. And access, in this case, means low and lower middle-income students. The elitism that she talked about, I've been in private higher education for over 30 years, is not something that I'm familiar with, because we certainly are. We understand that we need to make the price affordable to students who cannot afford it. The bottom line, however, is that that someone actually does have to pay the cost of a private higher education. And what's happened over the course of the last 7 to 10 years is that more and more colleges are competing against one another with what I call non-need-based scholarships. I think this whole notion of merit aid is a misnomer. And even when state governments, such as Georgia, for example, offer merit-based aid, the intent really is not to reward high school students for the wonderful job that they've done in high school, but rather to keep enrollments in state, or in the case of private colleges competing against one another, to cause a student to change their enrollment decision from institution A to institution B. That's what it's really about. And I would add also, and I would agree with Ken, where he said that middle-income families do benefit from merit aid, and that is the one saving grace as I look at Dickinson's non-need-based aid program or merit aid program, that middle-income families, upper-middle-income families that do not qualify based on the restrictive needs analysis formulas can, in fact, get some aid based on their academic merit. The problem, however, with this is that that scholarship aid is not awarded based on their middle income or upper middle income status. So if we're really and truly committed to access and we don't want to have a bipolar distribution of very low income students and very high income students, we need to look at revising the federal needs analysis formula.
And we'll have more on merit versus need when we come back from a short break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the changing equation of scholarship funding. Schools and states are awarding an increasing portion of their scholarship money to students based on merit as opposed to need. Where do you strike the balance? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking right now with Kenneth Redd of the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators and with Robert Massa, Vice President for Enrollment and College Relations at Dickinson College in Pennsylvania. And Robert Massa, I did want to ask you, there are schools like Harvard which have enormous endowments. I assume Dickinson is not in that category.
You assume correct.
So, as you say, somebody has to pay for these. You're arguing, I think, essentially that these merit-based scholarships are subsidies for the middle class.
No, I'm not actually arguing that they're subsidies for the middle class, because I, as the parent of two students in college, in private colleges, I know how expensive it is to send children to college. I also, as a college administrator, know how expensive it is to run an institution and to provide the kinds of educational experiences that private colleges strive to provide. So institutions like Harvard and others that are at the very top of the wealth chain, if you will, are not tuition-driven. Meaning that a good amount of the financial aid that they provide, for instance, for their students, is funded through their endowments. When you combine that with the great demand that those institutions have, they simply do not have to discount at all, other than for students who can demonstrate a financial need. For most colleges and universities, certainly in the private sector, they are competing against one another for the top students. And this rise in competition for non-need-based aid has really created a bidding war that, in my judgment, commodifies higher education and turns it into the same kind of negotiation process that you would go through buying a car, and it simply is not that. I will say, however, that that the needs analysis formulas that are currently being used to determine financial need for need-based financial aid are too restrictive for the most part. That is to say that if upper-middle-income families are not able to write a check for $40,000 a year, it's not because, for the most part, they're spending money on quote-unquote frivolous items, but because it costs a lot to live. And so rather than taking this non-need-based money, awarding it on the basis of merit in order to impact enrollment decisions, we ought to be taking that money and channeling it to students whose families really cannot afford the full amount and are unable to qualify based on the restrictive formulas today. So I'm not arguing at all that this is a subsidy for the middle class. In fact, I think in some ways it's a subsidy for the very wealthy. But at Dickinson, for example, about half of our so-called merit-based money goes to families who legitimately cannot afford to spend their $40,000 on a college education, but they're too well off, so to speak, to qualify based on the federal needs formulas.
Ken Redd?
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I do think the one thing that I wouldn't say that you should get rid of all merit money for this reason. A lot of parents and students really do like getting a scholarship based on their academic merit or their achievements in high school or some other points in their life, because if nothing else, it really makes them feel good. It makes them have some sense of accomplishment. I think there's a room, or there should be room in higher education for both types of financial aid, need-based and merit-based, particularly since colleges should have some leeway in awarding these types of funds. But I do agree with Bob in that the one thing that's happened recently, the last few years, is that there's been so much money thrown at merit scholarships that we have forgotten that the primary role of financial aid has been, and hopefully will continue to be, to get those students who need funding the most into school.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Kay. Kay is calling us from Boulder, Colorado.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment has to do with the merit-based scholarship money. My son is a National Merit Scholar. He applied to Washington University in St. Louis and was accepted and received merit money. But because of, it was a $42,000 a year institution and his merit-based amount was so small in comparison to the cost of that institution, he chose to go with the University of Texas in Austin, which gave him a full scholarship situation. And I find it interesting that these gentlemen are indicating that merit-based scholar is increasing, when really, compared to the woman who called you from Louisiana, it sounds like all they're doing at the private institutions are giving small little awards to try to entice people to go into debt at the end of those 4 years.
Robert Massa?
Yeah, I would say that institutions, well-endowed institutions that are in demand, like Washington University and like the others that we mentioned earlier, the Ivies, for example, do not have to give significant merit awards in order to enroll their class. And this goes back to my point earlier on, that these really are not merit awards, although they are awarded on merit. Let's not mistake that. But the reason they're awarded is not to reward high school students. It's to impact their enrollment decisions. So what you find is that the Washington Universities of the world, the Northwesterns, the Hopkins, Harvards and Yales and Princetons will not award significant merit scholarships, but other institutions that are just below that on the wealth chain will. So you have institutions like Dickinson, for example, and Hamilton and Davidson, the smaller colleges that are competing against one another for top students, will award significant merit money. And my concern in the long run is that this will impact the college's ability to offer educational programs that are of quality, to keep top faculty, to even make their investment in students who legitimately cannot afford this kind of expense. And again, just to emphasize, cannot afford out of pocket the kind of prices that we charge. So to that degree, I think that these so-called merit scholarships should continue to exist, except that they're not awarded on that, and they are awarded to many families who easily could afford the price tag but choose to go with the best deal.
Kay, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Robert Massa, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Robert Massa, Vice President for Enrollment and College Relations at Dickinson College. He joined us from their radio station there in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And, well, let's talk now with somebody on the other end of this decision-making process. One of the most studied merit programs in the country is Georgia's HOPE Scholarships. The formula is simple. Any student with a B average or above is eligible for aid. Joining us now to talk about the program's effect is Nancy McDuff, Associate Vice President for Admissions and Enrollment Management at the University of Georgia. She's with us from the studios of public radio station WUGA in Athens, Georgia. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil. I'm enjoying being here.
How many Georgia students are eligible for these HOPE scholarships?
Well, some days it seems like Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average in the state of Georgia. We actually have at the University of Georgia almost 100% of our in-state students qualifying for the HOPE scholarship here. So our in-state students coming to the University of Georgia are basically paying no tuition and fees and receiving a small book allowance.
So you think this is ultimately fairer than this combination of needs-based and merit-based scholarships?
I think it takes a combination of factors to meet all the students' needs. The Georgia HOPE Scholarship Program, which, again, is available to any student in the state of Georgia to attend any of our public institutions tuition-free, allows students from all different types of backgrounds to attend colleges. So it's certainly helping some of the students with the highest financial need. It's helping students from middle income, and it's helping the very wealthy. But it does provide a very equal footing for students to attend college throughout the state.
I wonder, as you listen to Robert Massa of Dickinson College talk about the pretty intense competition for scholastic stars, if you will, is that something that affects you there at the University of Georgia?
Most definitely. This time of the year, we have lots of students and parents calling us doing what we call dialing for dollars. They're looking for the best aid package for their student, and they're comparing what other schools have awarded them. Unfortunately, we have a good news, bad news story at the University of Georgia. The good news is we have one of the lowest tuitions in the country. Our students, as compared to the $40,000, $42,000 we've just been discussing, mm-hmm. an in-state student will pay less than $13,000 to attend here for 9 months. So with a very low cost of tuition, we have very little money then to give back in either need-based or merit-based scholarships. So we really do depend upon the HOPE Scholarship as providing a means for assisting students in attending. So when families call here and say, well, Dickinson has offered me X amount and Washington University has offered me X amount, what are you going to offer me? We'll say a great education at a very affordable price.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Steve. Steve's calling us from Wasilla in Alaska.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
My daughter is at the top of her class at our local high school, and one thing I've found is that athletic excellence is the least recognized achievement in our local high school, and to me this seems like a really misplaced priority, and that misplaced priority seems even worse in college. And it seems to me like the purpose of colleges and universities is to educate, and athletics are a secondary mission. And my question is, why is it okay for athletic scholarships to be totally merit-based, why would it be wrong for academic scholarships to be merit-based? And why do we not make athletic scholarships needs-based? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Nancy McDuff.
It's an interesting dilemma because certainly we are helping students with tremendous talent who bring tremendous visibility and prominence to our campuses by providing them with scholarships. It is based upon their athletic ability. It's not needs-based, although you will have student-athletes who also have financial need beyond the value of their scholarship. Not every student-athlete is on a full scholarship. Some are receiving partials, and some schools, Division III, NCAA Division III, offer no scholarships. So But at the big institutions that are playing big-time sports, he certainly is correct in that it is based upon their athletic ability.
In terms of the Hope Scholarships there at the University of Georgia, how have they changed, if they have, the makeup of the student body?
We've seen tremendous change at the University of Georgia. The Hope Scholarship's been in effect since 1993. We've seen every quality indice increase at the university. As demand has risen, and that's what's happened, more students want to remain in-state to take advantage of the scholarship. More parents want their students to remain in-state to take advantage of the scholarship. Very high demand at the university, which has given us the ability to select those who are academically most superior. So by all the indications of academic quality, we've seen increases at the university, and we're bigger. 10 years ago, we had about 12% smaller population on campus than we have now, trying to accommodate this increasing demand.
And briefly, how has it affected economic and racial diversity?
Economic would be an interesting one. I've not seen the most recent statistics on that. We used to collect financial aid information on every Hope scholar. They had to file that before they could qualify for Hope, in which case our students were more likely to be middle and upper income even 10 years ago. So I'm not certain it's changed substantially with the Hope Scholarship. We do know that across the state of Georgia, that students from low-income families, those students on reduced or free lunch programs, have increased their college-going rate during the use of the Hope from about 13% to over 20%. We've seen changes in diversity on our campus. It has gotten less diverse, and now it is becoming more diverse, somewhat as we're seeing the population change within the state of Georgia.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Nancy McDuff, Associate Vice President for Admissions and Enrollment Management at the University of Georgia, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line, and this will be Susan. Susan's with us from Cleveland.
Hi, your first speaker mentioned U.S. News and World Report. As the parent of twins going to college in the fall, I think the effect of U.S. News and World Report cannot be overstated. First, I felt it from my law school when it went down a few notches, and 3 days later, the fundraising letter arrived saying, we went down because we don't have enough books in the library. So if you give us more money, we can regain our spot. Then you have my kids have the good scores and all that, and they got probably 100 letters each from second-tier schools who are dying to move up in the rankings with U.S. News. I think before the survey was out, this kind of nonsense did not happen.
Is that right, Kenred?
Well, she's right in a lot of ways. The U.S. News survey has been going on for about 20 years, and prior to the last 20 years, you rarely saw institutions doing the kinds of things that she's mentioned. It's been since the last 20 years as more schools have tried to move up in the ranks of prestige where you've seen fundraising letters like Susan has just mentioned and the other kinds of things that schools have tried to do to compete with each other.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Susan. We appreciate it.
Sure.
And we just have a little bit left, but many critics of secondary education in the United States, many critics of primary education as well. Higher education in the United States is renowned the world around. Is part of the reason for that the intense competition that we're talking about for high-quality students?
Part of it is, but I think you're starting to see more and more critics of higher education as things like merit scholarships evolve. You're seeing more people criticize higher education for being too elitist, for not being in touch with the typical average person. And a lot of it has to do with the prices that we charge. Unfortunately, they are becoming more and more out of reach of the typical student and his family and her family. So I think you are starting to see a lot more criticism of higher education for those reasons.
Kenneth Redd, thanks you very much for being with us today. Kenneth Redd is Director of Research and Policy Analysis at the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, and he was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A.